Blog Talk Radio.
Hey.
Greetings, welcome, and peace. Welcome to Thor Radio Network. Today is Friday, June the 6th, 2014. We are live. Free Your Mind Friday. Having a bit of technical difficulty here. If you would bear with me 1 minute, I'll try to get the logistics taken care of, and we'll get into the show. Had an interesting show last night on our first evening show, Thursday, 8 o'clock. Had a special guest, Ken, a former debt collector, supervisor in the debt collection industry, shared with us some great information regarding the inner workings of the debt buying arena. My co-host was in the house of the Rudy, Layla, and Lori, as well. All of the Thor listeners were there. Had a pretty great turnout last night, which is indicating that the listeners want an evening show from Thor, so we're going to try to accommodate you and give you just that. Today is Free Your Mind Friday, whereby it gives you the opportunity to speak with Thor Radio about topics unrelated to debt, but somewhat touching on your debt issues. We won't have discussions on religion and race or ethnicity or any historical or esoterical conversations of that nature, but we will have the opportunity to talk to you about anything else that might be going on in your lives or economic lives. My panel will be here. You'll have an opportunity to address them. Just want to give a honorable shout out to a bunch of the finest, honorable, morally sound team that I have here. Layla, the mother, Rudy, and Lori, who work very hard in building up the foundation of Thor. They come from a variety of backgrounds occupationally, but it all ties into economics, which is why the universe selected them and guided them to Thor Ministry, Thor Radio Network. Definitely appreciative to them and their hard work and what they do. They've been around. They've heard it all, seen it all. So their experience and season and what Thor needs to do differently from others that are delivering a message or information. So definitely you'll hear from them shortly. I'm still trying to work through my technical difficulties. I cannot get on the internet or the board. So I'm going to talk my way through this. Some great points. If you didn't listen to the show last night, it is in the archive. And you can go and listen to it at Thor Radio Network here on Blog Talk. Great show. Ken will be joining us next week, more than likely, probably Monday or Tuesday, as he has experience also in the mortgage side of debt collection. I believe he worked in loss mitigation, and he's going to share with us some of the inner workings of that arena as well. So we look forward to that. probably not understanding why I'm not able to get online here. I cannot even open up my co-host lines here. You bear with me 1 second. Yeah, so while I switch computers here, I'll try to ad lib a little bit. Seen some interesting news. I think I shared with the listeners a couple of weeks ago, or maybe I didn't. Iran, they had executed a billionaire for doing some bank schemes. Became a billionaire by bilking the bank, similar to what you see here. Bilking the banks out of money, getting loans, and doing some things that that country didn't like. And he was executed. Executed. So, and he was worth about, he did a $2.6 billion bank scheme using multiple companies and, you know, just doing his thing. And they laid him to rest, which, you know, I know a lot of people have different opinions on other countries and their laws, but I think everybody might agree with the way they handle that and might want to get some of those laws implemented over here. All we need is one. We just need one. And I'm sure that that will set the example to some of these bank execs and debt collectors to tread lightly. In other news, I shared something funny. If those of you on the email list, a video of a criminal judge, I believe they were in Florida, who beat down an attorney right in court. Thing I've seen in a long time. Criminal judge. Attorney was in court with his client, who was in there for some alleged criminal wrongdoing, and I believe the attorney was attempting to assert his speedy trial rights. For some reason, the judge didn't want him, the attorney, to do that, so the judge was trying to talk the gentleman out of doing that, and the attorney didn't like that idea, and the attorney, he wasn't disrespectful, at least the portion of the video that I seen. He wasn't disrespectful. The judge kind of told him to shut up and sit down or something, and the attorney kind of said, I have a right to be here. That's my client, and I have a right to represent my client in the best possible way, and we don't want to waive those rights. The judge said, elderly judge, the judge said something to the tune of, you keep talking, I'm going to kick your ass, is what he said. And and the judge invited him out back. And the attorney said, bet. You got 3 or 4 sheriff's deputies in the court, criminal court, hack court, you know, defendants that allegedly committed some criminal offense, some of which may have been physical in nature, was sitting there watching this entire fiasco unfold. The judge got off the bench, told the attorney, come out back, I'll kick your ass. And the attorney followed him out back, and from what I can hear in the background, it sounded like a Three Stooges commercial, because I think the judge gave him a 4, 5, or 6 piece to the head. The article said he was hit to the head. And the judge kind of let him have it. And judge came back in the courtroom and made a statement, something to the effect that, ooh, let me catch my breath. I'm too old to be basically kicking somebody's butt. I thought it was the funniest thing in the world. So he came back in the courtroom, and I guess he went back to sentence his people for abusing someone, allegedly, or committing some crime. And the judge went back to business as normal. So I read the article on it, and the article said that basically the prosecutor was not filing any charges, and he was going to submit the incident to the Bar Association, and I didn't know they had their own governmental department, and that the attorney and the judge, they basically sent the attorney to another part of the court where they wouldn't cross paths. Okay? So, there you have it. Double standards. A judge can physically abuse and assault another one of his brethren in front of people who might have either physically assaulted another or been accused of physically assaulting another, while he imposed sentence and sets bail and tell people they need to go to jail for their behavior, his behavior is forgiven by his affiliation with the particular association. And right here on camera, cameras in the court, right there on camera, you see the double standard that exists. And you're able to view or at least hear or at least read about an attorney taking a beating from a judge, but because he has a license, spent a lot of money and time investing in that license by going to school and college and all of that, I guess they're able to tell him to shut up, take it like a man, take one for the team, and stay out of my way. And the judge gets away with it, and he's able to sit on the bench and tell someone else that it's wrong for them to hit someone, assault somebody, or abuse someone. So I'm going to ask you ladies, again, your line is open. I have the other computer open while I'm trying to work on the one that is not working properly. What do you ladies think about that example?
Well, this is Layla, and I first of all, the story is hilarious on its face, but the undercurrent is just devastating. I mean, that double standard that you talk about, the fact that that judge is able to come back on the bench and legislate to somebody else sends a very clear message to that community, to the country, that it's bold and in your face, and what are you going to do about it? I mean, seriously, that's a very, very big breach and breakdown, societally speaking. It's not a good thing.
So you think with an incident like that, that judge should not be allowed to sit on the bench or adjudicate on any trial or case involving physical violence?
I think based on the laws and rules that govern a judge, which is the judicial, that somebody should bring that to the attention of his higher-ups. I mean, how can you set an example for what the norm should be? And if you're sitting in a criminal court, and like you said, you're adjudicating cases based on abuse, assault and battery, et cetera, he should not be the one to do that. He needs to be moved someplace else. I mean, I don't believe he's fit, mentally fit for that. And that brings up another situation. A lot of people in those positions, judges, police officers and such, they're never acknowledged. They're not tested psychologically to see if they really should hold down those positions where they can exert whether it be forced on the paper with your signature or somebody at gunpoint to have those positions. So this is a prime example of what can happen and what does happen. And then the question would be, what should somebody or some group of somebodies do about that?
You bring up an interesting point. You know, I don't, of course, I have a great law, a great support from the law enforcement community. A lot of them are on my calls, from call to call. I do teaching with them as well. And I come from a family that has a great many people in the legal society. So, but of course I talk about what's real is real. And, you know, so many a time that these are the same people that adjudicate over matters of violence, and they demonstrate the same violence while in their uniform. This judge has on his robe, and not even behind closed doors, he invites another attorney to the back. I mean, he could have caught himself at 10 different points and said, wow, I'm in court. But, you know, look, I know that what they do for a living and what they do in real life often collides, okay? And we all know that nobody is in a position to judge anyone. But nonetheless, that's what he does. And for him to snap off like that, and I could see if the attorney had said something to him, questioned his authority. I mean, the judge just didn't like that the attorney was doing his job, and he appeared to be doing his job, moving the court to dismiss the case because of speedy trial. And the judge he didn't like that. He was trying to get the attorney to back down. I guess the attorney wasn't picking up on any of those subliminal signs. And the attorney was like, no, I'm doing my job. He looked like he was a recent grad of law school, and he was, you know, as you know, with anybody that's coming in to their occupation newly, you know, they're going to, you know, they're anxious, they're full of jet fuel, and he was trying to start off his job and career in the right way, and the judge was probably looking at him like, you little whippersnapper, I'm telling you what I want you to do. And the attorney was like, well, I'm just not going to do that. I'm going to do my job, and I don't want to waive any speedy trial rights. And he kind of got paid for it, I guess. You know, when we start talking about the commercial side of the courts, it would seem like any jurist that was doing the right thing and the man asserted some affirmative defenses that was within the guideline of the law, the judge should not have had a problem giving that man what he deserved, which was whatever remedy was allowed for him to get his case dismissed for his client. So those things concern me. They concern me greatly when those things kind of happen. Lori, what do you think about that?
Well, you know me, I come from a place of humor, and everything, you know, makes me laugh. But so obviously it just cracked me up, and I love it, the, you know, if I had a rock, I'd throw it at you kind of thing. But also to follow up with that, you know, the chief judge reassigned all of his cases to other judges, and that judge has taken a leave of absence and has agreed to seek anger management. So I think that judge might be retiring soon. I think maybe that was his last public showdown. I think something's up in Brevard County. They said, no, shut him down. Shut him down now. It's all good.
Yeah, I mean, they almost have to. I can't see them
absolutely
not getting – come on. I mean, did you see the way it looked? And the thing that concerned me was the sheriff deputies were standing there. They were standing there. I was like, are you guys – going to do anything? And this is the issue that I have. It shows that we have really no one to rely upon, no agency to rely upon to really enforce the law, because those sheriff deputies was very slow to react. They were standing there, and I think it wasn't until the judge probably hit him with a few rights and the guy was falling down until those deputies went in there and probably said, all right, come on now, come on, cut it out, come on out. You know, and then the judge just walked back into court. He was very humorous. He said, I'm too old. Basically, he said, I'm too old to be whipping tail like this. You know, I have no business whipping tail like that, but that boy don't understand who I am. And when I tell him to do something, to do it. And, you know, that was his attitude. And I was like, wow. I mean, it was very funny. But and then when I thought about it, I said, wow. Like, yeah, they're gonna have to take him down and get him off the bench. You know, he might be too stressed. I know that's a stressful job. I do know, regardless of what type of individual you are. I know, you know, dealing and
guiding people, navigating people's
life. Huh?
I said, you know, the other thing is people in Florida, they're not too happy with the courts right now. They've been getting a lot of bad press over the past few years, and people picketing outside over the foreclosures, and, you know, and they started that what the heck did they call it in Florida where they were just, the rocket docket. They started shoving all those people's homes through, and then Lynn Simoniak went out there and started a class out in the front yard of the courthouses and started doing teachings. And those judges, boy, they've been getting a hard knock. And then you got this guy over here acting like a clown. And those deputies, you know, they were in total shock and awe. What just happened, Frank? What, you do it? No, I don't want to do it. You do it. What are we doing here? What just happened? You know, everybody was
right.
Nobody probably could even figure out what was even happening in front of them. You know.
Yeah, they couldn't. They probably couldn't believe it. I looked at the deputies. You know, so what are we going to do? Jump on the judge? We work for them. But, no, you don't work for them. You work for the people. You don't work for the judge. This is what I'm saying. These deputies are supposed to be as neutral as possible. In fact, the judges should be fearing the deputies. But what happens in those environments is they become friends. And the law doesn't become the law. The law becomes the law for the people and a different law for them. And this is worldwide and countrywide. This is why we have this issue. The rules are made for the people while the banks and the debt collectors and some of the legal society get to do what they want to do. That's why Thor was created, to empower the people, to give the education to the people, so we don't rely upon anybody enforcing the law. We are able to enforce it ourselves, and that's a threat to them, because once we start learning the rules and learning what they say is not necessarily true and learning what they're supposed to know, but learning it a little bit better, then that's what's going to be the shift in the political world, the financial sector, is when the people start getting educated. You're not going to be able to do it with all this, you know, attacking them and asking them for their bar license and asking the judge for his oath of office and going in there and saying that you're sovereign. And, you know, it's not going to work like that. You know, it's going to work by the people getting educated. And you see that everywhere, that an educated person, educated people, is far more dangerous than you becoming a tyrant or terrorist, even in some cases, you know, or it's just going to work far much better. Because with that type of knowledge, then now you're able to demand monetary damages for their behavior, monetary damages for them skipping over that rule that they may do commonly amongst themselves. But when you get a pro se litigant, he's reading it for the first time, like this young attorney was doing. He just came. He had to be green. He just came out of law school, and he probably didn't go through the ropes and understand that when the judge tell you something, kind of do it. I guess he didn't get that class because he hadn't been around long enough. So he got the bus upside the head. In other words, to say that's your OJT, that's your on the job training. When the judge tells you to back down, you back down. But it was a good demonstration of what we should be looking at some of the double standards that exist out there, because that's not the way it's supposed to be. And this is the way. This is where, you know, when the people are educated in a proper way, then we're gonna make them elevate their demonstration. We're gonna make them elevate their knowledge, and be real careful. Don't be unassuming of an educated people. And that's what Thor is doing, trying to keep you within the guidelines as opposed to going off-road with a lot of these theories and processes and ways to become aggressive when you can just use your head, your reading ability, and your pen and just make them pay. You can be aggressive. That physical stuff is over in about 5-10 minutes. But when you take that pen to paper and you start filing what you need to file and they start having to write checks, that has a lasting impression on their mind and their behavior and conduct in the future, because they'll just be like, one pro se litigant will just read the rules from 1 to 5 and see that we skip 1, they're going to make us pay. So it's going to bring them back to their proper fold and have them accountable and amendable to the people, because that's who they're amendable to. But again, back on the deputies, they just really didn't do anything. They were surprised, and you know, they should have been smart enough to say, Judge, we need you to you need to go sit down, get somebody else to fill in for you. I'm going to have to ask you to, you know, get off the bench. That's the power that they have. It's the power that a county have, that a sheriff's deputy have. That is the most powerful agency in the state. I tell people all the time, as a sheriff deputy, just refer to your movies, your cowboy movies, your cops and robbers movie. You know, the feds always come in and they ask the sheriff for permission to do this and for permission to do that. And if the sheriff says no, then it's a done deal for you. You guys have to leave. Same thing with that judge. He should have been taken down. They should have stopped court, should have let everybody out of the court and dealt with that matter a little bit differently. But a lot of them are witnesses to a lot of things that happen, which is why I think it causes them to go out and maybe do things that are outside the rules. I've been seeing since Mr. President, our current president, in his 8 years, I've seen more political arrests and more of the big wigs going down than I've ever seen in the history of presidents. I don't know if he created the NSA or I don't know, but I know it's a lot of big people going down, a lot of people in the political and legal and law enforcement arena. You know, him and that Holder guy, I think, of course, they're letting a lot of things go, but they've been sticking their teeth in a lot of people, too. And it's those big people that are doing things that are ultimately very concerned about their conduct and behavior, because he can snatch them up at any time. I was looking at an article from Florida. Y'all know Sheriff Alpaio.
Yeah,
he's a funny guy. He's funny to me. I'm not offended from the guy. He's funny as I don't know what. But you know, him and the Justice Department, Obama administration, they've been at war for a long time. They've been at each other for a long time. In fact, I don't know if y'all remember the governor down there, down in Arizona. She had did the finger point at Obama, had him at the airport, and she was finger beating him one day. What's her name? I forget her name. Jan Brewer. She's the governor of Arizona. So they kind of don't get along with each other. And Obama has some words. And then from what I was reading a couple of years ago, the Obama administration had took the federal law from the immigration law. It was a federal law down there that Sheriff Alpaio was discriminating against the Latino community and arresting them on immigration. I mean, they were just targeting them, you know, like, just like they do some of the black community. They were just targeting them, locking them up, putting them in the desert. He had them wear pink underwear, pink uniforms, 110 degrees in the desert. He had the desert prison going on, saving money. He bragged that he spent only 25 cents a day to feed each prisoner. They were just eating slop. And, you know, he was working them to death. I mean, just good old, if y'all want to talk about something about slavery, Alpaio was doing modern-day slavery, okay? He was doing it mostly to the Mexican-Latino community. So what happened was the Justice Department, because of all that, those politics and Jan Brewer and and Obama and all of them, they had, and they did an investigation on that discrimination, which was clear. I mean, he was, I mean, they were just in the desert. That's what y'all see. They got those militias in the desert and trying to catch the illegals and locking them up and beating them and shooting them. You know, you name it, just outrageous conduct and behavior. So what happened was the Justice Department went, I believe, and they told them that they couldn't enforce that law anymore because they were abusing it. And they actually took it off the book. I think it was SB 85 or 84, some law that the feds had allowed the state or the county or sheriff or fire sheriff's department to use, and they were locking them up. And then they were locking them up so much to where the feds wasn't paying the county or the state to have all those prisoners in there. And it was something about money, and you know, and then the feds said, look, you know, because of your discrimination, we're turning the switch off. You can't enforce that law anymore. So basically, they had to stop. The feds told them to stop arresting them on federal immigration law because that was a federal law, and you can't enforce it no more. And this is when I really seen how politics really can go scandal-like when they start pulling laws from each other because they disagree, state and federal government, right? So the feds pulled the law and said, look, that's a federal law, and you need to not do it anymore. And they put out a toll-free number, you know, that if any immigrants was being harassed or, you know, they were being arrested for that immigration law, you call it, they had a number for you to call the Justice Department, and they were going to call down there and start. It was really beginning to get ugly. So what happened was the state, Arizona, went on ahead, and I think they implemented a law of their own to be able to still lock up the immigrants, the alleged immigrants down there. And I have an opinion on that in and of itself on who's immigrants and who's not. But at any rate, that's what happened. And then a lot of back and forth in the Justice Department went and sued Sheriff Arpaio in the state, and then he was running for office. And then recently I brought that up because there was an article. And as a result of the Justice Department, the Sheriff Arpaio's Sheriff's Department was a judge down there named Judge Snow. And I knew of Judge Snow because a couple of the debt collecting cases that a couple of people that I knew was before him. So he was, you know, as you know, they're federal, they do criminal and civil down there. So he was a judge on that, so I knew him from that name. But anyway, I think he had made a ruling on the case that was before him with the Justice Department, and they had to reel Sheriff Arpaio back in and tell him not to do this and not to do that. You can't be discriminating. You can't be, you know, they kind of, you know, locked him down a little bit. And what happened was Sheriff Arpaio, being the arrogant SOB he is, he started making comments, or his cronies underneath him, his deputy sheriffs, his head deputy sheriff guy, started making comments about, you know, the judge, talking about, man, we're going to continue to do what we want to do, something to that extent. And the judge found out about that, Judge Snow, and he subpoenaed Arpaio and his deputy back in court. And he and that judge got him in court. He says, I heard that you were at a function talking about the ruling that I made where you couldn't do this and do that anymore, discriminating against the Latino and Mexican-American community. You said that basically you implied that you were going to get or skirt around what I was saying and do it in a different way. He said, I'm going to tell you this. This is what the judge said, and I'm paraphrasing. If I find out you're doing anything to violate my court order, I'll come down there personally and come to some of these meetings just to see, just to listen if you're abiding by my rules to the letter. And if I find out that you're not, you'll be in jail for contempt. Says, I'm not playing about this discrimination stuff going on. So there was a sheriff deputy that was Arpaio's right-hand man doing this lawsuit with the Justice Department, and he was kind of in the middle of it because he was kind of over some of the teams that were going out there and doing some of the wrongdoing, allegedly. And recently they found him dead in his home. He had committed suicide, allegedly. Okay, you know, a lot of things has been happening. People have been shooting themselves in the head 8 times, and they're saying it's suicide. People take a nail gun and shoot themselves in the head 4 times, and, you know, it's suicide. But, you know, but they found him dead, and they found drugs in his house, some, and about 900 different videotapes that he had recorded during, you know, traffic stops and raids and things of that nature, evidence that was supposed to be used in these lawsuits. And they found them in his house. So a lot of things going on out there. I really think this presidential administration is squeezing a lot of the corruption, although we all know, I'm not sitting up here saying they're not corrupt or, you know, whatever, but there's been a lot of squeezing of these top officials because they understand that people in high places and in these high positions can do far more damage than the people, far more damage. So if they let these people get out of control, then, you know, it's just, you know, it's just not going to be good. So, you know, give me your feelings on that and what I shared, and tell me what y'all think.
I'm glad you brought that up. That was on my list of things to talk about today if we had any time. That whole Sheriff Arpaio, just, you know, I've been following his whole gig for quite some while. He's a very interesting character, to say the least, and a lot of all the muss and guts that he's been associated with and the lead. You know, he was the one who really raised a lot of that birth certificate Obama stuff. You know, there's probably so much going on behind the scenes.
It's funny you say that. Let me add that. He said he had enough evidence to arrest Obama.
Oh,
he said he's ready to arrest him.
Oh, yeah.
Said, this guy's crazy.
He was loading up the posse, man. And, you know, and you look at all of his deputy staff, you know, throughout, that's been hanging with him for, you know, many years and leading all this, you know, really almost a reckless crusade, to put it lightly, against many people and many rights and violations throughout not only Arizona, but just, you know, causing a lot of havoc and a lot of undue stuff going on across the country and incensing a lot of people from different cultures and backgrounds and attacking the administration, which I agree with you. I'm not saying, you know, this or that about it, but still, there's a proper time and a proper place, and you have to be careful what you're throwing out there for the masses to consume. And you know, they were throwing some, that was all public mudslinging, and a lot of stuff was going on behind the scenes, and one ship was going to sink the other ship, and the other ship going to sink the other ship. And I found it so very interesting what they found in that cat's house. And here he, you know, just supposedly hangs himself. You know, I think that's, I don't know. I just don't know. It's all a little crazy to me.
Real crazy.
And
there's
a
lot of that going on.
And, you know, John Stewart used to kick up a lot of dust about Arpaio. You know, he was going crazy train on him there for a while, and I thought, oh, you better stop that.
Yeah, you know, you have to, you know, you can't go, again, I tell people, and I hear a lot of the people out there just think one man and can change the world, and because you're screaming the loudest that you're going to be able to change things. The system is way bigger than anybody. It's not bigger than the people when they finally unite and come together. But as long as they have us divided on silly issues, first of all, if they have us economically enslaved, they know you don't have enough money to get to the bus stop to go to a rally. So, you know, that's one issue. And then you have your national media trying to promote the race issue and the race division and the racism and all of that. As long as they can keep us divided, then they know there's never going to be enough gathered at one time to make them change. And because you allow them to divide you, I think they depend on that and know that you're just not able to get enough people together to make them change. So they just enrich themselves. And you have the servants being the masters and the masters being the servants. And that's what's going on, and nobody not knowing the difference. And you got one or two people that may know, and they may go to enforce this. But, you know, if you know, I say it all the time, especially when you talk about a lot of these groups that are out there and they're coming together and they're sharing the information. I'm like, okay, we can talk about it forever, but what are you going to do? You don't have enough people to make a dent in anything. And you can go down there and be 100% correct with everything you say. But the 12 people on that jury is going to be like, huh? What are you talking about? You know, what do you mean? We've been programmed and conditioned to think that this is really the way it's supposed to be. And that's what you're up against. Now, when you start educating the masses, then you're going to have four or five, maybe even six people on that jury to be like, oh, yeah, I thought it used to be like that. But no, that's not really how it is. So you have to get enough people out there doing enough and not talking, but doing enough. And when you have enough people doing it, then that's when you're going to get the change. Until then, you know, you might as well just get used to it.
That's the most powerful demonstration that can be held and seen by any group or passerbys or reported on. That's the demonstrations that are needed to be taken across this land, not standing outside with a bunch of picket signs and this, you know, everybody walking a million miles and a million people and loading up in your cars or your motorcycles and rolling across. Yeah, you know, it's almost like, you know, it's the dust. That's just dust that gets kicked up and then settles right back on the same old ground. But the demonstration is the knowledge. The demonstration is people uniting together and people realizing that, you know, that it doesn't have to be a human race. This isn't a race. It's not a competition. We can bring it together and lay it down and everybody start demonstrating in the right way through peace and love and make it happen.
That's right. Rudy, what do you have to say about that? Chime in on this conversation.
Well, a couple of things. I'm going to go back to my original statement, and that is we talk about the criminal behavior and the criminal mind. I am a criminal justice major. I cannot remember ever having to take a psychiatric evaluation to be permitted to carry a weapon. Think about the number of people who have those weapons, who have that ability to exert certain amount of force on people, and you don't know if they're qualified mentally to have that job. So that goes back to the judges and different people. You don't know what their real characteristics are deep down inside. You don't know what they really think. You don't know what kind of mask they're wearing in order to get the job or get the position to be in control or be in power over somebody. I mean, you can look back from the beginning of this country. And if I'm not mistaken, when they say the country was discovered, they sent the criminals over here. They got rid of them from one country and put them on a boat and sent them someplace else. So you had to go back to your humble beginnings from whence you came to look at who's here and who's in power and then follow that up with different groups of people and different things that they're doing. Their money control situation, they can buy themselves out of certain situations. They can have a wiretapping and a this and a that. They can do whatever they want to do because they have the money to do those kind of things, and they don't come to court. Or if they come to court, they may have a judge there who understands what they're doing because maybe some money went one way or the other or something like that. So I can understand that it's a different set of rules for different people. And then when you talk about people coming together, the greatest thing that I believe people can do when they come together is try to get the education to put the pen to paper to make a difference. Because sailing up the Chicago River, being trapped on the Brooklyn Bridge and all those kind of things, they don't make change. That's not how change is made. And people have to come to a forum like this where they can get educated, be able to express themselves, hear the opinions of others, and start to think and to make a difference within themselves. Once they're grounded within themselves and they then know what is right and what is wrong, they can make a conscious decision to say, look, I think I want to walk this path over here. I want to learn what should be done, what are my rights, and different things like that, and then empower other people to get the knowledge, because without the knowledge, you can't do anything.
Rudy, I want to disagree with you slightly on the firearm issue, you know, with the mental stability or instability. I've seen our country go to a prescription-based society where and now in school, and I don't remember this growing up at all. The only pills I remember growing up was aspirin, Bayer, and Excedrin maybe. I don't remember this prescription and Ritalin and this and ADHD. I don't remember any of those diagnoses. The only diagnosis I remember is that you were a bad kid. You were bad. It wasn't ADHD and ADHD and all this other diagnosis stuff with the kids. Look, it was you were bad. And if you were bad, you know, you had a strap, a belt, a stick, a slipper, a sandal, a rod, or whatever to take care of that. You didn't go to the doctor. You didn't take any pills. And we didn't hear any fancy descriptions of your behavior. You were just bad. But now, since everybody is on medication of some sort, and they're doing so at a very young age, then I think this is intentional, because I believe there is a movement to disarm America. And I believe once you disarm us, then we have no defense. If we were talking about judges that's going to knock an attorney out in court, and we're talking about police officers abusing people, killing people all the time, you know, they need to be tested. They need to be tested. They're carrying around a weapon every day. I say this all the time
that's
to my
right.
friends. You remember the last time you had a mental evaluation? Some of those people are on pills. Some of those people are on depression drugs. I mean, and they're carrying around life and death to a certain extent. And I think if you start testing them people, you might have a slimmer law enforcement force. Because I think those guys suffer from, guys and girls suffer from a lot of things, just one of which is just you can't get around, which is the stresses of being in that environment. And that's one stress that may cause you to, you know, be an alcoholic, a drug abuser. It was just a police officer in San Jose. He was behind on his storage unit. They opened it up. He had a bunch of weed in there. He was selling weed, and they interviewed his brother, and they said, well, you know, do you think he uses the drugs? He says, no, I just think he might have had some financial problems. But he's on a drug unit that arrests people for having drugs. This judge sends people to jail for maybe hitting somebody, and he beats up an attorney right in front of court in front of everybody. You know, so then you have the DSS department that if they see a mother and father fighting, then they're going to take the kids. But then you see a judge beat a guy up, and you don't take his position. You see what I mean? This double standard is just ridiculous. And I'll just say this and let you go ahead. I really don't believe in the disarming. This meant all these shootings by they're on some drugs. Okay, they're on some drugs, and I do believe that if you're on some drugs, then you should be evaluated. But you cannot say that everybody does not deserve to have a firearm or a weapon, because they can use their car, they can use antifreeze, they can use cyanide, they can use a knife, they can use a stick and accomplish the same thing. So go ahead.
Okay. No, I was only talking about it from the law enforcement classes, that when you come into that arena, those classes of psychiatric evaluation was not given. It may be given now, but it was not given then. That was not the focus of the classes that were taught. It was search and seizure. It was the going out to the range and different things like that. They were not tested at that time for a psychiatric evaluation to see if you were mentally competent to handle a gun in stressful situations and exert what they would consider to be reasonable force for force to be met with force. That's what I said.
Okay. I understand. I can agree with that. Layla, what do you have to say on that topic, if any?
Well, I just think that, number one, everything that we see out in the media, everything that this video that we would talk about in the courtroom system, it seems like we've gone back 50 years or so. It's just amazing. I think that the division that we talk about is a design, and what that does, it breaks families down, and if the family is broken down, then we as a nation of people don't have any power. So as long as the negative forces, if you want to call them that, are in play, that divide, they will conquer. So, you know, being able to unplug from the system is very difficult to do. Now, I hear about these stories. I don't even engage in these stories anymore, because I feel like I have the power and the will to make a difference, and the only way that I can make a difference is with me first. So, you know, everybody needs to work on themselves, and then from working on ourselves, we impact our families. By impacting our families, then we can now impact our neighborhoods and communities, the city, the state, the country. and the world. I mean, we see the unrest all over the world. I believe that, you know, this negative force of division and the oppressionistic pressures that are being placed on people all around the world are affecting. So I think people are starting to wake up, if you will. I think that we are in those days where we don't know the people that we're associated with. They say, you know, we won't know our mother or our sister or our brother to be who they are supposed to be. We're starting to see these things. They're bold and in our face. And when we talk about the community as a whole being medicated, you know, I've been dealing recently with a lot of military people that have just come back from Iraq, and some of the things they can't even talk about. They don't want to talk about, and they're coming out of the military with these post-traumatic stress disorders. They come out with all of these medications, and you know, when you look at somebody on the physical, you have a conversation with them, you think that they're all right. But in the capacity that I've been dealing with these individuals, when they have to lay out their information for me, I mean, they're on 10, 15 meds. I mean, we have people that are on 20, 25 meds. How can anyone be really competent on that number of medications? It's just very, very, if you want to say scary, that would be a good word, scary. How can they really function properly? Now if we're looking at it from a perspective of now these people are in law enforcement, or if they're sitting on the bench and they're to adjudicate cases on behalf of people, how can they do that effectively? And what is it that we expect the government to do for us? I mean, they're supposed to be for us, but like I said, it seems like we've gone back 50 years and they're self-serving. The only way to overcome that, I think, is for us to empower ourselves. And I think the platform that SOAR brings, it brings people who are aiming to do something, number one, positive in their lives, positive for their families and their community. And SOAR is looking to basically help people get through the mire of the junk that's out there so that they can live as prosperous, you know, as prosperous as possible. It doesn't always have to be financial. We are about economics, but prosperity comes in many forms, spiritually, mentally, physically, monetarily. We have various areas of our lives that we need to work on and improve and be able to make that difference.
Beautiful, beautiful. Transitioning, you know, when I think about a lot of the systemic failures that are going on, I just don't understand how the people in these high places are able to dictate anything when they can't maintain themselves. You know, there was I read an article about a executive that worked for, what is it, what they call it, DFACS or Children Health Services, or you know, the people that deal with the children. And she was a high-up supervisor or something, working with, you know, taking people's kids, making sure they're not abused. And they locked her up. She had five or six kids, I think some of which was adopted, and she was getting money from the state. And she had marijuana in the house. They were selling drugs out the house. They said the house was so nasty, had bugs and rodents and roaches and all over the place, and the kids were just in deplorable conditions. They were selling drugs, meth. I mean, you would think it was out of a movie. And she was one of the supervisors for the Division of Children Services, going out taking people's kids, and her house was just an absolute, it wasn't even fit for an animal. That's what they said. They've never seen anything like it. She'd come to work every day, okay? And adjudicating on other parents that they're not fit to take care of their own kids. I'm seeing this so much that it is disgusting. It's absolutely disgusting. And, you know, until the people wake up, it's not going to change. Before you go there, let me bring in the Yama, see if she wants to chime in, Mother, on this topic. mother being from New York, which is where we're both from, you know, we see a lot of that because in these huge states, you know, you see a lot more nonsense than most people would see in some of the smaller rural states. Mother, what do you think about this topic? First of all, welcome and glad you're here. And tell
shalom,
me your
shalom, shalom. Well, we have to realize that, and you brought it out, and I'm sitting and I'm thinking, I said, you got to bring out the drugs. You got to bring out the prescription drugs that people are on. You know, I would always say to people who, you know, when I was speaking with them and they sort of not, they didn't believe what I was saying or they didn't trust the words that I was bringing forth. And I would tell them, I said, well, you have to realize that 99.9% of people in America are on some kind of medication or on drugs. And if they don't take those drugs daily to control their actions, then the beast that's in them will come out. And that's what happened with that judge. What's in a man, even though he comes up there and he sits up high with his robe on and he knows that he has authority over everyone that's in his court, he didn't realize that. Oh, he knew what was inside of him, but it was always contained by him taking drugs, because that's what people do in America. That's big business. And it came out. What was in him came out, and he act out his self. That's who he be. He be a person that will want to rule others, and if they don't stop speaking, he wants to whip them down.
That's
and that's
right.
What happened. He had no control. He's the one in that court who's supposed to have control over the action of the court, and he didn't have control over his own action. He act like a thug, wanting to beat up the attorney, and he called him out on it. And is that acceptable? No, but we have to see. You see, if you don't see what's in a man and if don't come out, then it can't be corrected.
That's right. Good point.
So he needs help. The man needs help. And
so any
as one
of
the co-hosts
was
saying,
capacity, mother, what about somebody that works in that capacity? What type of mental evaluation do these judges go through? You understand? You're narcissistic, you're controlling, you're abusive. You're everything that you rule upon all day, every day. So, you know, this is a inside view of the people that we stand before to pass judgment on something they're guilty of. Now, if he would do that in the public, why don't we interview his girlfriend or his wife and see if he has to knock their head off a couple of times?
Exactly. See, in his private life, that's how he responds to things. But when he get into the public, he want to be looked upon as that he's able to control himself and control others and make sure everything work in order. But he was completely out of order. And there was nothing he could do about it. There was no restraints. He couldn't say, well, I'm not going to do this now. No, what was in him came to full course, and it came out, and it came out to war, to battle, to destroy. And and the title that he has, those are not the characteristics of it. But that's what he exposed himself. And it was time. See, it's time for people to expose themselves so they can get what? So they can get the truth. And the truth will restore them. But if you keep suppressing it with drugs, and it never happened, and then what happened when they're not going to get drugs out like they do now? They're not going to. It's going to come a point in time that the drug people, what they're going to give, that what they were giving, the strength that was in that drugs, is going to be watered down, and it's going to be chaos. And the judge, he showed it. And this happened to be caught on camera. I'm quite sure a lot of things like that have never been caught on camera, but it's happening as we speak.
That's right. You know, the interesting thing about that, mother, is that when I look at that incident and I look at other things that are going on, I come to the conclusion that the mental instability, now who knows if that judge is on some type of medication, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Who knows if he's abusive in his real life? What I did point out about that video, wanted to point out, was the fact that he never apologized when he came back in the courtroom. He just said, oh, I'm out of breath. Oh, man, I made me get my breath. And then he smiles about it in a humorous way. He goes on to, all right, you're going to be sentenced to 30 days, and you're going to, I'm going to give you bail, and I'm going to, you know, he just goes right back. And I watch everybody in the courtroom, and I watch the sheriff's deputy, and nobody flinched. Nobody said, wait a minute, we need to take a recess. This is not right. And, Rudy, I want you to come in for a minute, but I also want to say right quick, because I want Rudy to talk about how when we hear a lot of these people out here and a lot of these groups where they want to teach you how to go in there and pick fights with the judge and pick fights with the attorneys and tell them this and tell them where to put it and how far to put it and, you know, how what kind of speed it could take when you put it there and give me your bar card and let me see your oath and let me see that you're a citizen and let me see that you're from here and let me see you're not from Wales. You know, all of this stuff. And if you don't see by that video that they have the propensity to beat the stew out of their own organization members, then, you know, I think you should abort any opportunity you have to go down there. And I want you to talk about that for a minute, Rudy, because you've been around in some of those groups and atmospheres with this is what they promote. But I want to say one other thing that Mother brought up, which was an interesting point, which was about the medication, and I dated a therapist before, and, you know, she often dealt with, you know, as you know, therapists and psychologists are different. Psychologists can prescribe medicine. A therapist mm-hmm. can't. She deals with most of the emotional, mental side of things. The therapist kind of looks at things that encompasses all of that, but she's able to prescribe certain medications for, you know, your situation. But I always used to find it interesting. I said, well, I'm doing this couple and I'm doing that person and I'm doing this person. And I asked the question one day. I said, let me ask you a question, okay? Because once the therapist gives the medicine once the psychologist gives the medicine, they can go see the therapist. So I said, let me ask you a question. Which person are you rendering therapy to if they're under medication? There's two people. There's the person without the medication, and then there's the person with the medication. They're different people. What if you get the guy on the day or the girl on the day where they didn't take their meds and they're going to be a little bit crazy? Do you mm-hmm. ever deal with the real person? Because if they're on medicine, that means the pharmaceutical agency is just getting their money forever. And as you know, when they do medicine, they're not curing you. Okay, they're not curing you. They're just keeping you in a comatose stage to be able to deal with. And so you're dealing with the medicated person, and how are you rebuilding the medicated person when the medicine just kind of makes the person avoid the behavior that may be harmful or destructive to them? When do you ever deal with the unmedicated person? Because that's the one that needs the cure. It's the crazy person without the medication that needs you. So you're not, what job are you doing? So, you know, it's almost, I comment on that, any one of y'all, that if you're a therapist and you're just talking to the person that's sedated under medication, what are you really doing? It's not really much to deal with them because they just basically in a doofus stage. They're just like, oh, okay, you know, did you take your meds today? Yeah, I did. Okay, so you're easier to talk to. But what if that person don't take their meds, which is what we're finding in a lot of these cases where allegedly they're killing people, campus shootings, things of that nature. It's like they were prescribed medicine and they didn't take it, so they snapped. So that means all that therapy you were doing, you were just giving therapy to the wrong person, and the real person that exists underneath the therapy is never getting mm-hmm. any treatment because he's always suppressed with the medication. Tell me what you think about that, Rudy and Lori and Layla, and tell me, am I right on that, or what's your thoughts on it?
Okay, is anybody
Rudy
there?
First.
I guess I'll...
Uh-huh. No, go ahead.
Okay, well, okay, what I was going to say, I've got a couple of things that I want to say, but one of the things that I was going to say that you have to look at the person in leadership, okay? When you asked me about the first question, are they doing or have they done what they're telling you to do? And that was your first reference about go in and talk to the judge this way and tell somebody to do this and tell somebody else to do the other thing. But the thing is, you have to know who you are and what where do you come from? What's your environment? What kind of product have you become from where you have become from where you have come from? You can't just let anybody tell you what to do. But if you're not stable within yourself and you don't know the difference between right and wrong, then you will follow anybody anywhere. Sometimes we don't step back, I think, and just look at the overall picture of the person who'll be in control of our behavior. And I'll give you an example. I don't know if some people remember the book, Dr. Spock wrote a book on how to take care of your babies and the different things that you're going to experience when you're pregnant, and first one thing and then another. Well, I was reading the book on Dr. Spock, and then all of a sudden I thought, he can't have any babies. He can't tell me anything. And I put the book down. I said, this is ridiculous. And this is what we do a lot of times. We go to people who really have no firsthand experience about the things that they're telling us to do. And you see this all the time. So if you're talking about a person who's giving a psychiatric up to somebody, what is his stability about? What's his mindset? Who is he?
Good point.
Is it that he is going to, like some of the counselors in different places, the more people I have on my roll, the more I secure my job. So I don't want to really empower you to move. I just want to keep you where you are because that's job stability for me. And I think you run into that a lot. The more people we have in court who have no clue about what's going on, then that's a business within itself. Different things strive off of funds, and you have to look at how those people in leadership positions are keeping other people in oppressive positions. And sometimes we don't look at who's leading us, who's guiding us, who's supposed to be teaching us. That was my comment on that.
That's a good way to segment into another area that's of great concern to me and everybody on this call. When Rudy speaks about who's guiding us, who's looking at us. Now, we know we have a lot of lip syncers out there and, you know, so-called gurus, and, you know, many times they're telling you and getting you to be the guinea pig to do things that they don't do. And, you know, Rudy would know about this. Lori would know about it. Layla's been out there. We've heard a lot of people out there. You know, we have people, you know, supposedly teaching you on how to free yourself of certain debts, but they haven't done it. They're telling you to use this document, but they haven't done it. They're telling you how to get rich, but they're broke. You know, they're telling you how to, you know, do this and do that and how to be free and how to be sovereign, and then they get locked up, and it doesn't work for them. So, you know, and I find that when these things happen, okay, why are we being led by these type people? Why are we not asking them questions? We can't even ask some of the gurus questions. Some of them will absolutely go off on you just for asking a basic question about something that they're promoting, and many times they're selling, and you don't ask any questions. Let me tell you another area where we have a problem. I talk to a lot of people who get attorneys, pay that attorney anything that attorney asks for, $10,000, $20,000, $30,000, and that attorney will do a little dance that might look good, or he might do a dance that may not look good and just basically tell you, you know what, I'm just sorry, the judge just didn't agree, or you're just not going to get a free house. But in the beginning, they were selling you, oh, yeah, I can take care of that. Yeah, oh, I understand. Look, I'm gonna sing your story, okay? I'm going to tell them that was wrong. Now, saying that is wrong doesn't necessarily make it a violation of law, but they will put together a good story, you're paying good, they won't accomplish anything, and most people will just walk away and not even question them. Be like, well, I had an attorney, and he basically didn't do anything. I'm like, really? But they're come on a Blog Talk call and argue and fight with you for hours because you made a recommendation, okay? But they'll go to an attorney and just take what he says, and when he doesn't perform, they'll just walk away. They'll walk away. Tell me about that, Ruby, if you would. And then, Layla, you chime in on that topic.
Okay, I really think it's because people aren't educated in the field. When you go out, or at least when I go out to do something, I try to research before I get there so I can ask the questions I need to ask. If you're going to go talk to an attorney, well, pick an attorney in a field of the services that you need, doctor, or whatever it is, and then go in and ask the pertinent questions. And that would be, have you done a case like this before? What do you think my chances are based on this, this, and this? Well, what about some of this, or what about that? You can't go and let somebody else dictate to you, and this is what people do, where, you know, they're in this position and they're supposed to know. Well, my father used to say, because the person graduated out of college in whatever field it was and had some money and hung a shingle outside, it didn't mean that they were at the top of the class or the bottom of the class. And that's what we don't know. We don't know who we're going to, who we're talking to, and what their ulterior motives are. Are they really there to help us? Are they billing hours and just getting money? Are they telling us anything because we don't know? And we face that all the time. That's why a program like this, where a person can get a basic, sound, solid education, is so important. You don't want to do things that are going to get you into difficulty. You don't want to do things or have somebody write documents and papers for you, and you can't even read what they wrote, and supposedly you wrote it. You don't want somebody writing and doing something for you who has no idea about your own particular case or your state laws or whatever. I mean, and we see this all the time. And I spoke to somebody yesterday who said, well, no, I just want a few documents. I just want a few documents and say, I'm just going to take my name out and I'm going to put my name in over here. I said, is that right? And so I hear this all the time. People have no concept of what they're really getting into. And sometimes they as the mother would say, they'd be best to just back up and turn around and walk away than get into a situation that they can never, ever wiggle out of because somebody else has trapped you and left you over there. You can't explain your way out because you couldn't explain your way in. You'd let somebody else lead you in there.
Wow, that was powerful. And that happens a lot. Before Layla go on, I'll just say, I just don't know how many times we can fall for the same thing. I look at politics, and I watch people every year go out and vote for somebody that says the same thing differently, okay? And after a while, you start to wonder, none of y'all have changed anything. You make promises. They give you a little bit of, you know, a butter sandwich with some mayonnaise, some sugar. And they get in office for 4 or 5 years, okay, go ahead and accomplish their own agenda, and then somebody else will come in there that looks different, and people will be running, thousands of people will be in the street wanting autographs because this guy may have said one thing that appeals to you, and you go down there and get all involved in politics and want to vote him in because you haven't realized that nobody is going to change your life until you change your own. And you keep relying upon the government and the politics and the politicians to go out there and do something where if you're a part of that organization, because I'll give you an example, that lawyer that just took 3 or 4, 5 or 6 punches to his head is a part of an organization. And because he's a part of that organization, he took a beating physically, abusively, just for his job. How many politicians are willing to take a beating for you? How many politicians are going to be willing to change the world? We've had presidents that's been killed. We've had icons that's been killed for promoting certain things. So when we look at it and we think politicians are going to change our lives, the governments are going to help us, the economy is basically in the hands of other people, I think you're doomed. Layla, what do you have to say about that?
You know, what comes to mind is, you know, ignorance to the law is no excuse. That just is just resonating in my mind right now. And you ask me, so, well, what law? Well, you know, there are universal laws. There are laws to physics. There's common law. There's laws in mathematics. I mean, there are all kinds of laws. And if we're ignorant to it, then it's our fault. We, you know, prior to getting to this specific topic, I just wanted to touch on, you know, what I mean, I'm not a psychologist. I'm not a psychiatrist. However, I still deal with a lot of people, and people are people, and there's human nature that is prevalent in all of us. And I'm finding somewhat of a common thread. If I were to sit down and write a thesis about it, I probably would be able to say that I have found a common thread. And I feel that through my experiences with people, members of my family, and even experiences that I have encountered myself, society has taught us, or you know, the prevalent thread of, or the prevalent, I want to say the prevalent theme, if you will, is it's better to give than it is to receive. And when people are givers, you know, there are some people that just say, okay, fine, just give me, give me, give me, I'll take. But when you have people that are givers, they end up usually giving of themselves, and then they become selfless. And when you become selfless, that's still a part of that dumbing down, that you're not really that important. And because you're not that important, everybody else is, or somebody else's mission or goal or what the politicians speak out there. It's just more important, bigger than the picture or the image and where it is that we personally want to go in life. So it kind of shows itself in various forms. So what happens, I feel, is that when people have that philosophy ingrained in them, then they don't really think that they're worth that much. And if they don't feel like they're worth that much, then there's nothing that they really need to consider standing up and fighting for. They just end up sitting on the sidelines looking at everything that's going on as a spectator. And that's what we end up doing when we, you know, go to these sporting exhibitions. We become spectators. When we're looking at the television, we're spectators. We're not actually enacting. If you're actually in, we talked about basketball game last night. If you're actually a participant in the game, you're a team member, you're actively engaged. Now, as a spectator, you might be engaged and being happy and rooting for your team, but it's not the same as actually being out there in the field. So when we end up giving, what are we giving? So I just take it down to another level, and it's a lack of love. I think that ultimately, I think that when we give and give and give of ourselves to other people, and we don't expect anything back in return, that we're not being honorable to ourselves, we're not showing love for ourselves, and therefore, if we can't show love for ourselves, we can't show love for other people. And if we have love for, if we have children, we love our children. We love our children unconditionally. But do we love our own selves enough outside of our children to say, you know what, I'm going to do something to make a difference to be able to impact somebody else? Are you willing to step outside of that boundary, outside of your home, and say, you know what, my neighbor across the street needs to have their lawn mowed. Are you willing to go mow their lawn because he hasn't seen that the lawn is mowed for a while? Did you go knock on their door and say, is this something I can help you with? You know, I was sitting out here the other day, and there was a man walking his dog, and he had one of those, those extenders. When you want to grab something from high above, you have those little extender devices. He was just walking his dog, and he was picking up trash in the community, and I'm like, well, that's really impressive. I mean, he was doing it because he had a sense of pride, and he was looking to make a difference. You know, and that goes back to that power of one. Expressing love to other people, and that becomes a healing for the soul, your own soul, your own spirit, you know, and then that's what I think moves people to empower them to do something outside of themselves, bigger than themselves, to be able to impact others, and back to what I was saying before, the community and the world. The self-empowerment piece, that's what that really exemplifies, in my opinion, and I think that we really need to start drilling down to that point. If we can get to that point, if people can really see beyond the shallowness of everything around us and get down to the core of who they are, because that's what Rudy was talking about, who are we? Figure out who you are. Figure out what makes you tick. Figure out what makes you work. Did you tell your child today? I mean, our children are out of school right now, but you know, when your family leaves, do you tell them you love them? Do you know that you're going to see them when they come back? Do they feel empowered when they walk out the door to know that you told them that you love them? Has anybody been told that they are loved? Are you telling the people around you that you love them? I think that the reason why a lot of these people are on these drugs is because there's a lack of love in their life. They don't know. They're not getting what they need to be able to stimulate them to do great things. So the drugs, the medication, are that stimulant that keeps them in a state where they are okay. You know, they're seeking something. There are people that go in and say, doctor, you know, I need this medication. How do you know you need that medication? And the doctor's prescribed it. You know, so I just think it just goes down to a lot deeper level, and I think it just deals with love. And we look in any and all of the scriptural writing and the people that were sent to the world to bring a message. The prevailing message is love. Love is the healing balm. And if you can get to that point, I think everything is great.
Brother Sharif, before you move on, could I interject a thought here? One of the things that has been gigantic in my life and has stuck with me for a long, long time is part of the speech President Kennedy made. And he said, and so my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you, but ask what can you do for your country. So my thing is that you have to look within yourself for whatever it is you need, and you should not be looking for a handout. And see, people don't do that. They're looking for somebody else to give them something without doing their own due diligence and any research to find out whatever it is or the subject matter. For example, when I teach Sunday school and I come in on a Sunday morning, I'll say, how many people have your books? They'll raise your hands. How many people read the lesson? They'll raise their hands. How many people understand the lesson? They'll raise their hands. So good, then we don't need to talk about that. Let's talk about what they don't want us to know in this book. For example, if we start on chapter 15, a particular verse, don't you want to know what happened between verse 1 and 14? I do, because every 20 years they repeat the same lesson. But there's lots of other things that people don't want us to know, and so they control us with the literature that we read, the other person's thought of how they see whatever it is. And so we're caught up in a trap of somebody else's mindset, somebody else's way of thinking, and we never have our own because we're not willing to step outside the box and read another book or read another passage or read something. We just don't do it, and we're stuck in a trap.
That's true, and it comes down to the I am. Who are you? Who are you, not anyone else? And, you know, when I go into self-education, which is one of the things I promote here at Thor, that's different from everybody else wants you to depend on them, and you're hanging in the balance between one show to another. Well, I try to empower you and give you enough to be able to have you make it on your own and maybe be okay with missing that next show because you have enough direction and enough information to move forward. And when I think about how we become more educated will make everybody else around us be held to a higher standard, especially dealing with debt collection in a legal society, is that how many times have you went, you know, a lot of people say, you know, well, you know, you go to certain places and, you know, I had a friend that was going to file something at the court, and he just asked the clerk a simple question about, well, where do I file this appeal or something like that? And she went into the, I can't give you any legal advice. And he says, wait a minute. Like, I'm just asking you for the legal information. Like, I just paid you $200, and I'm just asking you to direct me to the shelf, to the form, to the book. You know, this advertisement of the Legal Society and everybody always trying to push you to depend on any one person. I don't care if it's a Legal Society. I don't care if it's a preacher. I don't care if it's a legal. I don't care who it is. I don't care if it's me. You have to be able to depend on yourself. So when you talk to me, that I'm going to give you the right information based on what you know. You might not know everything I know, but at least you can engage me with where you want me to go with your matter or your situation. So when you hear a lot of people say, well, get a lawyer, get a lawyer, get an attorney, I can't. You can only talk to an attorney about that. That's the nonsense that I just don't promote or believe in, because I'm telling you, in the many years I've been around, I've known a lot of lawyers lie to me. You understand? They will lie to you in your face. No, that's not what the law says. No, you really can't do that. No, what it says is, you know, how many times? So this is where I tell people when they try to steer you into one particular society or association, you need to know it for yourself. You need to know it for yourself, and you need to know it better than your gurus, your lip syncers, your legal society. You need to know it for yourself because you, when you know it for yourself, then you will be able to understand what I'm saying, that some of these people that have licenses, some of these people that have experience, 18 law different dictionaries, 18 appellate court decisions, and read a few cases, they will lie to you. Will they not, Layla? We talk to people all the time that we listen to them talk, and we get off the phone, and we're like, oh, my goodness, this person loves absolutely nothing. I mean, it's absolutely crazy. I mean, this person knows absolutely nothing. And my team know I talk to them all the time about it. They say, well, I heard that over there. And I'm like, okay, well, let's look into that and tell me if that makes any sense to you. I'm like, wow, they sound so believable. They sound like they know what they're talking about. Oh, how many people I talked to a lawyer. He says, nah, you can't really sue on that. I'm like, what? What are you talking about? I've done it tens of times successfully. And an attorney told you that, and we seem surprised. Why? Because we've been taught to depend on them, okay? We've been taught to I told you, I know attorneys that are in foreclosure, okay? Period. Y'all have go to an attorney sometime, and you're like, ah, well, I really don't know about the consumer protection law, but I don't really don't think you can use that in a foreclosure. Okay. How many times have I heard that, Rudy? Come on. You know, you've heard a lot of things. You've done a lot of interviews with attorneys, and some of the things they say, you've been like, what? Now, I know better than that. So, you know, you have to understand, just because someone has a license does not mean that they know everything or they will always tell you the truth. We just seen a judge beat an attorney up. Okay, and I bet
That's
you if
right.
they charge him today, I bet you if they charge him today, I mean, let me tell you how nonsense it is. If they charge him today and he went to court, he would plead not guilty. Now, how are you going to say not guilty and you on tape punching him in his head? Because why? The court system allows you to lie. Somebody's lying. In every case, somebody is lying and somebody's telling the truth. Two people don't win. There's always a winner and a loser. Somebody is lying, point blank. So stop steering me towards any one person except for myself to understand law, to understand commerce, to understand the debt collection, the debt buying industry, contract law, things of that nature, even criminal law. I need to know it for myself because I know that people will lead me astray. People will mislead me. People will misguide me. Sometimes it's intentional. Sometimes they just don't know. So because they feel they have a certain title, they should know. So they throw you out an answer that many of us will rely upon, which is when you get into, start getting into the debt collection industry, you have to say in your pleadings, the plaintiff relied upon this information the debt collector gave me. Okay? That's a damage. Look, they told me that, and because they were a bank, and because they were a servicer, and because they talked the language, and because they had the fancy paperwork, and because they sent me this document that looked legal, okay, I relied upon that information, and it took me down the wrong road because I later determined that it was erroneous. That's your claim. You have to learn this language. You have to learn that if you rely on somebody and they mislead you, you have to hold them accountable, which means your leaders, your gurus, and everything else. You go back to them and say, hey, I got this verified motion to have the sky fall at 9:30 in court, and it didn't work. I'm holding you accountable, like, what's going on? Like, you said that this works, but instead they'll get 20 more verified motions to make the sky fall, and they'll still roll with them, okay? And then here's somebody else that they'll say, hey, let me put this, like the Jehovah Witnesses do, let me put this law in your hand and let you read that for yourself, and we'll come back by tomorrow. And after you read that, we'll have a talk. That's not even good. You know, then they get to look at you and say, oh, well, he's not in my same, you know, religious group, or he's not my same, of the same ethnicity, or he's short and I don't like tall men. And although he's helping me economically, I just really want somebody to save me that's, you know, that looks like me or talks like me or knows somebody that I know.
Hey, Brother Sharif, can I say something real fast? Cause
you go. You were next.
It is echoing, like screaming at me, and it's so funny. You know, I've talked about the synchronicities that happen throughout all of us, and it's so funny that Rudy brought up the speech that John F. Kennedy had said at his inauguration. I had just read that 3 days ago somehow or some way, I forget what it was that caused me to stumble on that. And you know what he was really saying is build your own power, self-empowerment, and take control and help your country, and stop looking to leaders. And whenever I have three sons. When I was raising them when they were young, and I would sit and listen to their days and the things that they were saying, and I would see that they were maybe trying to trend with a certain crowd or trend with the starry-eyed over a new guy who may be this or maybe that. And I'd always tell them, you know, don't be looking to those people and trying to form them as leaders in your eyes, you know, because anyone who's leading you, always remember they've got their back to you. They've always got their back to you. You need to look at people that can be teachers and mentors in your life, and you just take certain things and tools and lessons, and you assemble them in your own life, and don't be trying to fit in. And that's, I think, what has really happened a lot around the globe, not just in America, but, you know, America definitely has been impacted by this. But everybody's trying to fit in. Everybody's trying to be this one same thing, you know, the it or the cool or the this or the that. And everybody forgets, and it starts crushing your spirit, you know, because you can't let your own God out, you know. You can't just unleash that beautiful flow that you have in you and realize that that's the thing that makes you so beautiful. That's the thing that's so cool. I love the differences in people. I think that's the most interesting thing about any one person, the thing that's not like everybody else. It's hip to be different, and everyone would stop trying to fit in this box or being afraid that someone's going to judge you or you're not wearing, you know, all those poor kids that get conditioned into thinking that they have to wear these, you know, $200 shoes and have this jean and have that jean sagging off their hinder. And, you know, everybody just fitting in. And the people who have made a difference, if you'll notice throughout history, they're the people who were different. You know, they are the people like JFK, Martin Luther King, Rosa Parks, all these people who made beautiful waves throughout our consciousness and throughout our history, and their marks will never be forgotten, the steps and the choices that they've made. They were the people who were different. They didn't fit in.
Good. That was a great, excellent point. Great point, being different. The people that walk into... communicate with those debt collectors are the ones that are different. They don't get many letters that look like that. They don't get many people that's able to talk on the phone and tell them basically, Rudy, what a lot of them promote, talk about telling somebody where to put it and how to put it. If you're able to communicate that intelligently, you know, that letter will serve to remove or prevent removal of valuable monetary resources in your bank. Speaking of bank, Lori sent over a couple of articles. When we talk about economics, I guess we have to touch on the topic of currencies. Seems like I've been hearing a lot. I heard maybe in California, I know in Arizona I have a friend out there. He said they have some gold vending machines. It seems like California is poised to accept Bitcoin as a legal currency, lawful money in their state. So an alternative currency is here, and I know a lot of people, you got a lot of people out there in a lot of communities, Rudy, Patriot community, other communities that talk about, you know, money and what it is and what it is not. If you're serious about talking that talk, then you need to do something similar to what Bitcoin did, create an alternative currency, okay? That's where you're able to, you know, use your it's something other than Federal Reserve notes in its technical application and meaning. So, you know, I see a lot of that going on. People, and then you sent me an article, Russia pulled out 61% of their money in the U.S. I think China pulled out a bunch of money as well. I really don't get into those topics. They're important. Currency is important. But, you know, if they decided tomorrow to change to Bitcoin, and that's what the debt collectors have in their bank account, I'm going to find a way to get it. I'm just going to be using Bitcoin. It doesn't matter. It's going to be a currency. As long as you got debt collectors, as long as you got debt out there, Brother Sharif is going to find a way to get whatever currency. I don't care if they start using Monopoly money tomorrow. I'm going to have a stack of it because these debt collectors, if we explain and Ken had brought the information to us, they can't prove a debt. They can't prove how much you owe. They don't have the paperwork to determine what and if you owe. People in there are straight out of the ABC store. And, you know, I just can't see myself being oppressed by an underground of debt collectors that you think they're going to put me into poverty and everybody around them, including their governmental oversight departments and agencies, are telling you, hey, people, they can't, 96% of your credit reports are erroneous. And if you know your credit report represents your commercial wealth, and they said 96% of your reports are erroneous, I just don't understand. Why are you over somewhere worrying about what color you are, where you're from, who's doing this, whose cows is getting taken? You know, I mean, why don't you go and get some money? Why don't you go and get some wealth? Warren Buffett, you know, spent $4 billion for $400 billion in debt, and you see where he's going with it, okay? He's understanding that you got, he said 96%. You mean to tell me I can make 96 cents on a dollar? I'm in, all right? And we're showing you on Thor how people are coming on the show with little experience in intercourse with debt collectors, and they're getting empowered because they sent out a letter or they said something on the phone or they went to court and did something, and it's just like, voila, the world changed. And I'm like, wow, now this works in between Tuesday to Tuesday, not from 2008. Where some of these people talk about these processes and procedures, and they still haven't worked, and it's 2014. From week to week, you're seeing a transition and a transformation in the mentality and knowledge and success of people knocking off, hammering away, throwing away, hammering out some of their debt issues. And that's what it's about. It's about what works, not about what's really right and wrong. It was wrong for that judge to beat the nonsense out of that attorney, but, you know, we can go down there and argue about it. If he wanted to take his blows to the head and just, you know, do his work on the other side of the court building and avoid the judge, who are us to render a decision on that? That works for him. So a lot of times we're just coming together, talking about things that may be right, you know, facially on the surface, but it doesn't affect us as debt does. It won't put us in poverty because you believe you're from one tribe or another. It won't put you in poverty if you believe that you're superior to someone else. What will put you in poverty is if that person thinking that way is able to affect your economics by starting up a company and telling them you're their servicer or they're a lending or they're a creditor, which is a very important title. They're a creditor of some sort, and they deserve to go and put your family into a bad economic position using some paper. And that's all it is. It's paper. You know, paper, piece of paper and a stamp is sending you a letter, and these letters are putting people into poverty and even making some people commit suicide. So, any other comments from Yama? What do you have to say on that? And then I'll switch gears and go to another topic. We got about 15 minutes left. We're going to just do a two-hour show today, and we're going to go and enjoy because we have the webinar tomorrow. Yama, what do you have to comment, your last comments on the topics at hand?
Yes, when we talk about the money system, we know that when America want money, they just print more. And if they switch over to any other currency, if they switch over to precious metals, and if that's going to be the currency, then the whole world will be it'll be a downfall because no one has the precious metals. They don't have the gold. They don't have the silver. They just don't have it. So a currency, paper money, my thoughts is it will always be flowing, and it's the value of it. If a dollar becomes the value of a quarter, then people will be in need. If the value goes, if a dollar goes to the value of $5, then everyone will prosper. But if it devalues, then whatever the going rate, whatever the products that they're selling, the world will be in somewhat of calamity, because United States have the money, they have the reserve money for all other countries, and when they want to buy something, they have to change it into American dollars. Now, I heard that, like you said, China and Japan, different countries are not depending on United States money to buy oil and other products. But one thing about, and I always have to go back to my truth, my resources, the truth, the creator. He has all, he knows the big picture. He knows those who know truth. And if you know truth, you can be restored. Whether you have a dollar that's worth a penny or a dollar that's worth $5, the truth will restore you. And I always have to go back to the creator, knowing that he's all-knowing, all-powerful, and he's everywhere present. I have to rely on that, because that's my foundation, and when I build on my true foundation, I will prevail.
Indeed. Indeed. Yeah, and again, it doesn't matter to me. Currency doesn't matter. We explained on our call on Tuesday, I believe, that the power of Equifax, TransUnion, and Experian, they're in Equifax, at least, is in 14 countries. And y'all thought it was just a U.S.-based company. 14 countries. The governmental agency, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, who is over all of the debt collection arena, said that 96% of people's credit report is erroneous, and that 90-something percent of the people don't show up in debt collection lawsuits, and that 94% of the time, they can't even prove that a debt exists, or don't have enough to convict you of being liable for a debt. Now, I just don't know what else they need to send. I mean, I don't know how many. I don't know if some of y'all need a balloon or one of those airplanes that has the scroll coming across, or whether they need to do one of those beeping sounds when the emergency broadcasting come across. I don't know what else you need to do. One would need to do other than tell you that, and these people are in 14 countries, okay? Meaning that if I decided to move to Canada, Thor would still be in a position to get some of that free money, okay, that they're giving out, knowing that they can't keep up with everything. They cannot keep up with everything that they're doing, and they already know that they're going to make a mistake. They have a buffer account for people like us. Okay? That's why they fight you tooth and nail, not $4,000. Let's just stop that nonsense. That $1,000 rumor, that's just, you know, me and Layla was talking to somebody, and she was on the same impression. Oh, well, really? The consumer protection? Oh, yeah, it's just $1,000. I'm not going to do anything for a couple of $1,000. You know? I've heard some attorneys say that. Like, oh, wow, okay, great. Thank God for Thor. You don't know what you're talking about. You have no idea. You have no idea what you're talking about. Okay? No idea. So, you know, 14 countries with Equifax, one of the oldest bureaus that's been here since the 1800s. Okay? Now I've seen some of the typewriters from the 50s and the 60s maybe, and I've seen how those look. I can't imagine how they were gathering information in the 1800s. What was it written on, Yama, or what? On a T-shirt? On a garbage bag? I mean, what were they? I've seen the cameras from the 50s or the 60s. I'm trying to imagine what they were using before that. So what it is that they have a lot of information in these computers, a lot of information in these computers about you, and you know, defamation, character, and, you know, things of that nature. You know, they used to be in the slimy business of, you know, putting out propaganda about people. Same thing our national media news sources do today. Same thing that these reality shows, they get on TV and promote ghettoism, fighting and arguing, women basketball-wise, basketball guys, this and that. You know, just bad behavior is what our kids are viewing on this telling lies visually term television. And it's just ridiculous. I faded out of television over the last few years because I'm just realizing how, I'll say it nicely, how full of nonsense they are. I mean, it's
yes.
just at the difference in reality and TV is like from here to Africa. It's just, it's really just, it becomes disgusting to you when you really know the truth, and then you listen to this radio, and then you go out and you know that everybody has cable and a TV, and then you become sort of a recluse because you start talking to people and you're looking at them and they're saying things, and you're like, wow, you got that off TV, didn't you? You have no idea. If they turned off the TV in this country for 6 months, it would change things. People would get
yes.
smart.
Yes, see, Sharice.
Yes, ma'am.
You just said television. The word speaks out. It's saying, it tells you your vision.
That's right.
Mind controls you, so you can think whatever it gives out into your home, into your ears. It wants to tell your vision. And that's what television is all about, basically.
That's all it's all about. Let me bring in a caller.
Yes.
Go ahead, mother.
I said 99.5% of television is to tell you what it wants you to think. It tells you your vision.
You know, one of the indications of that, and I'm going to bring in a call at 630-3555. One of the things I was looking at when I looked at TV is I was looking at TV one day, and I see how they just create commerce, get people to thinking, and they created this, what was it, Internet Monday or something, or Internet Friday, Monday, or something on a Monday, and I said, and everybody needs to go online and shop, and it's going to be good. I'm like, and people were, they said millions were going. I was like, when did this Internet Monday come about? Did they just create that out of thin air and make you believe that on this Monday you get to go out and get a good deal? Now, I know a lot of people work in retail. And being in business, you know, you have cost and you have retail. Okay, so they get you to come in these stores where they mark everything down. Do you know how high they were marked up from the beginning? They're
yes.
still making money. And they get everybody to come out there, and it's guaranteed that they can get rid of all of their distressed merchandise, they can get rid of everything they didn't want, and still make a good day. And people be lining up, staying out there for days,
yes.
to where if you do some shopping, you could accomplish the same thing. And they get trillions of dollars, and they made up Internet Monday, where you should go online and buy everything.
Yes, the words, again, what you said, into the net Monday.
That's right, mother.
Into the net Monday.
Into
we have
net.
To read these words,
That's
and
right.
then we won't get trapped.
That's right.
Shalom.
Shalom, peace. All right, 630-3555. You're on Thor Radio, Free Your Mind Friday. How you doing, brother?
Hello, Brother Sharice. Again, a wonderful show. I appreciate you
Thank
for
you.
It. And all of the participants as well. I want to read a paragraph to you that I got that was included in the first Dunning letter from this debt collector.
All right.
Again, I want to tell you what I think the infractions are. What I do, Brother Sharice, is I make a copy of the Dunning letter, and then I take the statutes, and then I apply it to each either sentence and or paragraph that they violated. I don't write on the actual Dunning letter.
Right.
I keep that as proof. Okay, here's the statement. If you have not contacted this debt collector within 30 days after receiving this notice to dispute the validity of this debt, and if your total debt is $50 or more, you are hereby notified that a negative credit report may be submitted to a national credit reporting agency if you fail to fulfill the terms of your credit obligations. So the first one that I want to use is 1692E8, threatening to take a legal action that they have no right to take. And then 1692,
nope.
I'm sorry?
Nope. No, you don't want to do
okay.
that. This is what you
All
want
right.
to do. This is the communication from a debt collector, right? You don't
right,
want to apply
correct.
Any law. You don't want to educate them on the law. You
oh,
just,
I'm sorry.
Look, what they said was not false. They said that if you don't dispute the validity of the debt within 30 days, and if it's over $50, then they could be reported to one of the credit reporting agencies. They have a right to do that. You know, 30 days is what they're telling you is, procedurally, they have to move at their pace, meaning that they're going to send you letters out. You might be in Iraq. You might be out of town. You might be on vacation. You might be gone from your home for an extended period of time. So that doesn't mean that you have an obligation to respond to it. But what they're saying is, look, we're going to give you 30 days, and if you don't, we're going to go to the next step, meaning that we may send it over to an attorney, meaning that we may send it over to the credit bureau. You know, they can't be held up because of your inaction. You might be one of the 96% that's not going to answer either way and don't care, or may be guilty of the fact that you have a debt. So all you have to do is dispute it. Now, if you were gone for more than 30 days, you can dispute it later, and they put it on your credit bureau. They sent you notice, and they said, listen, if you don't answer, you don't have to, but if you dispute it, you need to tell us within 30 days so we don't go to the next step. Now, you don't want to return and the correspondent's like, hey, you know, pursuant to 16 U.S.C. 1692, you just made a threat. Well, what do you mean I made a threat? We just sent you a dunning notice, and we said, listen, we feel you owe a debt, and if you feel you don't, let us know. But if you don't answer, we're going to proceed to whatever the next step may be. That may be we might sue you. That may be we might, you know, do something else. We're just letting you know what we're doing. So you don't educate them. As you see, when I talked to King yesterday, you know, and you know, I kind of just gave them the topic of the law, but I didn't give them the body of the law. I'm not going to say, you know, well, I dispute the debt. I didn't say, now, you know, within 30 days, you got to send me, you got to do this, you got to do that. No, I don't do that. They might not know that. And from judging from what Ken said, the caliber of people that work there, I'm sure they don't know. And like Ken said, they don't give a darn. And I'm glad they don't give a darn, because I'm going to make money off of their inaction or ignorance of the law. So the only reason why you're thinking, my brother, in terms of 1692 FGH or whatever you're going to, is if you're going to court. That's all. You're going to
yes.
apply that. You don't have to give them any warning that you're going to apply that. But as far as what you told me, no, they didn't violate by what they said.
Okay, so
they didn't take a threat. They didn't threaten you.
Okay, so there is no threat. Well, Brother Sharif, I appreciate what you just said, because you challenged me on what I said, but I didn't describe to you what I really wanted to say. So that's
okay.
excellent that
Go
you
ahead.
Did that. What I was stating to you that I didn't state was, whenever I sit down with a dunning letter, I apply these statutes in preparation for my suit. And that's why I wanted to ask you if these statutes apply. Did they violate these statutes? Because I'm preparing
right.
a suit. Now,
okay,
so,
well, I got that.
So,
I caught that part,
okay.
and I just want to catch you in sections
okay.
so I can get each one of your questions so I don't forget any of it. That's the only reason why I'm cutting you
okay.
off, because, you know, you're going to go
right.
in. What I caught you at the right time, and I said correctly, was I didn't need any remainder of that. You're saying 1692F because they took a threat. I'm telling you, no, that's not a threat. They didn't threaten you.
It.
They just said, okay,
got
you.
It.
So no threat there
okay.
on 1692F. Okay, go ahead.
Okay, all right. Now, the next one I wanted to apply to this letter was 1692GB, because when they sent me a response back validating the debt, they assume validating the debt. Do I use the second letter that they sent back as a violation of 1692GB, collector must cease collection efforts until the debt is validated? What they sent back to me was a statement, computerized statement, from, and again, this is from original creditor that they say I owe the debt to. Is that validation? And I know it's not validation, but I'm going to ask you because I want you to educate me on what real validation really truly is.
The courts have said that validation is the name of the original creditor, address, amount of the debt. That's what they said.
Okay.
Is validation, but we're that's what they said. But
okay,
if that information is not accurate, then you can sue. Now, did that information come from the original creditor? I don't know. It all depends. That's why you're suing, because now I know you can know inside your heart, or you can know from personal knowledge that Ken gave you one of the tricks. You got a $500 credit card, and he'll call you. Well, you owe $800-something. You're like, oh, wait. My limit was only $500. See, now he got you to acquiesce, and now he got you to engage in subject matter talk. So in that instance, they might say that you owe $800 on a $500 card, and you send them a notice of dispute to validate, and they come back and they're like, yeah, that $800 is true. And you're like, I'm going to sue you, because I know the limit was only $500. It shouldn't be $800. So even though they're going to – you already know. You don't have to wait for a debt collector to respond. I'm telling you, I've seen a million of them. They can't and they never will respond accurately. So doing it for conditions preceding. You're just doing it procedurally, sending out the notice. So they sent you back something and they say, yeah, this is who you owe. Well, that didn't verify it to me. That's not satisfactory to me, because I told you, because when you read the law, it says you can dispute part or all of that debt. You can say, in the case of, like Ken would say, I had a $500 limit. You're saying I owe $1,000. You can say, no, I only owe $500. So what the debt collector is going to do is just go back and be like, okay, yeah, we verified that you only owe $500. When you want to pay? You see what I mean? So you're suing for, again, you telling me that I owed that amount, or you telling me you got that information from the original creditor, and the original creditor might not be around. When I dispute, I'm disputing what you said I owe the original creditor. So if you're going in your own computer, how can you determine what I owe when you're saying that came from the original creditor without verifying it with the original creditor? You understand what I mean?
May I interject? Go ahead. This sounds
like
a show and tell class where we would have a lot of people come together and bring their documents and then be able to exchange information where everybody was on the same page at the same time. Sounds like this is good for another class.
Yeah, good. I want him to get his understanding too, but I do understand that too. And we will get into that and share how these sponsors should be and how they're not responded to correctly. But what I want you to understand is that most of the time, nothing they say is going to be accurate. And most of the time, you're not going to get validation from anybody but them. You understand what I mean? But they're supposed to go to the original credit, give you the name and address of your original credit and the amount. And many times, they can't do that. Okay? Because if you read the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau reports, they say that a lot of times, the original creditors can't do anything. So they don't have the paperwork anymore. So it obviously tells you have to go to the source that says that I owe the money, not you. If I bought a lawnmower from you and you sold it to somebody else and they said, look, the lawnmower don't work, man, it's something broke with it, you can be like, well, I got it from Sharif, so let me go ask Sharif if that was broke. Well, if you can't, he's going to be like, well, I told you I bought it from somebody else. Well, how do I know you bought it from somebody else like that and you didn't break it? The point is that you got to go back to me, and if I'm not here, how can you verify anything was wrong with that lawnmower, what may be wrong or whatnot? You know what I mean? So it's just they can't prove it because they don't have the information. They're not the source of the information, okay? And you don't know if they went and verified the debt with the original source, especially if the original source is no longer here.
So in other words, my point, Brother Sharif, is if a debt collector responds with a second communication after you dispute the debt, and they come back with another letter, does that letter automatically fall on the 1692 GB? Whatever.
Yeah, if you did a dispute and their response to your 1692 G letter is something that you know is not factual, yeah, it's going to fall under the entire act. Sure. Your response is not verification, not validation. You did not answer my question. Okay, you providing me with some spreadsheets. You know, your 8-year-old could have. Who did you get that from? Who did you verify it with? How did you come up with that amount? What calculator were you using? You know, what, you know, those things are something that you can bring suit against them and make them prove that they verified with the original creditor allegedly, and make sure to how they acquired that amount. Now you would know that information if really you had the account. And in some cases, people never had an account with these original creditors. But you would know if it was right or wrong because, again, I make this clear. It's not about the debt. It's about your conduct. If the law says you got to go verify and you don't, that's a violation regardless of whether you had a good debt. If the law says you have to respond by 5 o'clock on Friday and you do it at 5:30 on Friday, then that's a violation. It's not about the debt. It's about the conduct and your behavior. If the law says you have to be exact about the amount and you're a penny off, then it's like you're $1,000 off. It's not about the debt. It's about your conduct and your behavior. You understand what I mean? It's never about the debt. It's never about the debt. It's about did you do everything the law says for you to validate or verify that debt. And many times they can't and they won't.
Okay. Very good. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
And always include in your communications, just in case. You don't want to go to the district court, just in case you're not savvy enough to do so. Always include in your communications your state consumer protection law. So on the lease, which is what I'll discuss in the webinar tomorrow, you'll be able to go in small claims court and set up a win for you in district court when you've won on the state level. And it's not res judicata because you're bringing up an entirly different law as opposed to a state law. Two different laws. Yeah, I won in the state court. You understand? But now I'm going to win in the federal court. Okay? Always
so
include that in.
Take different. You take a state court action, bring them into small claims, win that case, and then you move to the federal court. See, I've never been in state court. I've only been in federal court. A few times that I've gone, I've always won. But you're suggesting that I take Illinois state laws that they violated and get some money there and then take different sets of violations into federal court. Am I understanding you correctly?
Sort of. What I'm saying is if you have those available, then if they violated the federal consumer protection laws, many times they violated the state consumer protection laws. What I'm saying is you have two different courts, two different venues. You can do them all at once, or you can do them one at a time. You understand? You can do all of them at once, or you can do them one at a time. So if they violated the federal, many times they violated the state. So you use both. You can choose whichever one you want to go in, or you can do them all at once if you're able to, but many people are not. Okay.
All right. Since if I go to federal court and I include in federal court the proper jurisdiction by stating that the federal court has state jurisdiction to act upon the violations, that is the proper way to do it in federal court.
Concurrent jurisdiction, things, over your state court claims, you can do it. You can do both.
Okay.
But again, sometimes you just want to do the state and then do the federal. Can do them both at once if you know what you're doing, absolutely. All right.
Wow, that's powerful. All right. Thank you very much, Brother Sharif. I'll be back in touch.
All right, brother. Thank you. Peace.
Thank you.
All right. I don't have anybody else in the queue. And I think we had a very good show. We were able to get off topic, talk about some things. Y'all did a great job. We don't have to leave right now. If y'all have something else, Rudy, Lori, Yama, Layla, your lines are open. If y'all had something else to add or another topic, I'll gladly engage. If not, we'll just call it a happy Friday. Get ready for the webinar tomorrow, June 7th, 11 o'clock. We have a few seats left. Small Claims Court. What can you get out of it? What can you do? Can you make some money in there? Do you know how to use the court properly? If you're not ready for the district court, because it is a little bit more complicated, and you want to go in a more relaxed environment, what could you accomplish in there? You can accomplish a lot. And if you had that webinar tomorrow, you'll understand that. There will be no recordings of that webinar tomorrow. So if you want to be in the house, you need to be in the house. Email us at debtshow@yahoo.com. And you can attend. It's going to be a good one. Rudy, do you have any comments or topic that you want to discuss? Rudy.
Get another phone.
Hello.
Okay. All right. I need you to get out that jet and get on the ladder and come on down here and talk to the media.
Okay, I've got to disconnect and have to come back in. I just want to tell everybody how much I enjoy what Thaw is doing. And I think one of the things that gets a lot of people in trouble is that they're not able to accept, nor will they accept where they are. Sometimes they think it's too complicated, too time-consuming, and too confusing. But here at Thaw, Thaw keeps it simple with the KISS system. Keep it simple, stupid. Tell everybody to come over. Get a basic sound, solid education. Let's keep it real. Keep it moving.
Beautiful. That's right. Keep it real. Keep it moving. Simple. We keep things simple because the Creator has allowed us to translate sometimes conflicting and difficult information and reading into something that sounds a lot easier. So definitely, you know, we appreciate Thor. We appreciate being able to dumb down the information or water it down to where everybody can understand it. That is definitely a gift and an art, and we appreciate it. Lori?
It was a great show. To the young man who just called, I would tell him to look at 1692E, 1692E2. Think about what that means, the characters, the amount, for the legal status of the alleged debt. And also to look at 1692F1, the attempt to collect any amount not authorized by the agreement creating the debt or permitted by law. And everybody have a great weekend. Sign up, get your education this weekend, and I look forward to talking to y'all then.
Beautiful. Layla.
Thor family, another great call today. I pray that you got something out of this call today that you'll be able to use. You just heard Brother Sharif talk about how we're going to have the webinar tomorrow. This is a way you'll be able to cut the meat, so to speak, get into the depth of what it is that you need to know to move your cases forward, calling it a case, get your claim, well, claim, that's not a good word, your matter move forward so you can start getting those money damages coming into your mailbox. We aim to bring you what you heard Rudy say, the simple KISS method. That's what drew me to Thor, keeping things clear and simple and clean and precise. We will be back here.
Beautiful.
And we'll look forward to seeing you guys very, very soon. Love you all.
Beautiful. One more quick announcement to let everyone know. Thor Radio, Brother Sharif, will be a guest Monday on Dry Bones Connections. Dry Bones Connections, Monday evening. I believe it's 8 o'clock. If you're on the email list, thatshow@yahoo.com, we will give you that information, call-in number for you to listen in. It's Dry Bones Connection, Blog Talk Radio, Monday, I believe at 8 o'clock. Thor will go over there and bring some deliverance regarding debt, talk about some other topics, what's going on in the community at large. We'll be over there on Monday. Hopefully you'll come on and follow us and support us over there while we're trying to bring some different information. Tomorrow, the webinar. Tuesday, we'll be back here on our regular scheduled night, 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. We're going to have a couple of guests on that Tuesday show. And we look forward to everybody being there. Meanwhile, for those of you that are fortunate enough to attend the webinar tomorrow, they'll be coming on here and providing testimony about what they were able to accomplish with the information that's going to be delivered tomorrow. And again, we're the show and tell group. You know, we try to demonstrate our abilities, not through talking, but through teaching. And we're hoping that everybody that is able to attend, we won't have a recording. There will be no MP3s out about that information. So just try to be there tomorrow. Other than that, everybody should have a good weekend. Be safe out there. Study. Read. A lot of money out there in the consumer debt collection arena. A lot of money out there. Debt collectors leaving a lot of money on the table, leaving you a lot of opportunities. Okay? Study up. This is something that's not going away. Other than that, I want to thank my panel. Thank the mother for being here, Rudy, another mother, Lori, Layla, for providing their support and their monologues. Of course, I love them to death. And again, think about what Layla said, love. At the end of the day, do you love self? You don't love self, you're not able to love anyone else. Do you love self? Are you easily misled, easily led astray? Why? Because you don't love self. You can love somebody else before you love your own self. And then when they let you down, you still don't go into the mindset that loving self will allow you to love and help others and do it with a loving heart. Some of the people we listen to don't have loving hearts. They love us as long as we listen to them. They love us as long as we shut up. They love us as long as you don't ask them any questions. That's not love. Here at Thor, we promote love because we love ourselves and we love what we do. We're not looking for a million people. 100,000 will do, but 100,000 that are getting it done, that are empowering themselves, that are taking their lives into their own hands and taking their economics into their own hands. So meanwhile, I want to say thank you. God bless. Take care.
Brother Sharif, and Thor Ministry Radio. Brother Sharif and Thor Ministry Radio.
Dig this.
Ladies and gentlemen,
here we go again. How low can you go?
How y'all feel out there?
I know you're gonna dig this.
Okay, party people in the house.
Pump the volume.
Yeah, boy.
Are you ready for more with Thor Radio? Are you being harassed by debt collectors?
Yeah.
Are you facing foreclosure?
Okay.
We'll bring the hammer down on your debt by using Thor strategies and tactics.
Okay.
Brother Sharif and Thor will educate you on the consumer protection laws, which will allow you to hammer away your debt. Get ready, reset, and restore with Thor Radio. Thor Ministry Radio. Now, here is our own Brother Sharif. Brother Sharif. Brother Sharif. Brother Sharif. Brother Sharif.